There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Hey, almighty fallen listeners. Lux.
Yep.
Got some exciting news.
Go for it.
You already know it, though. We're recording another episode of Unguarded Shooting here at the Almighty Baller Studios. Check out... Oh, man. I actually do have some super exciting news. So go to almightyballer.com in about a day. I'm restructuring the site, and I'm restructuring the site because we're adding a series of podcasts called The A-Team on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. And it's called The A-Team because A for Almighty and Team because they each cover a specific team. We got Zardcast, they're covering the Wizards, C.T. Schwenk.
Yeah.
Michael Luxenberg, my co-host for Unguarded Shooting. Me, Michael, and C.T. are our best buds. Jay and Mark over at the New York Knicks podcast are killing it. Warriors Huddle, super awesome. The Undebeatables, all hilarious guys, you know, from the doc to the bartender, mixing up the drinks and crappy jingles. Stellar stuff from all across the network. Also, you know, Red Nation Hoops, not going to leave you guys out. So, yeah, we're going to be adding more team-specific podcasts to the A-Team, you know, as we go along. I don't want to force it. I chose only podcasts that I myself enjoy, reached out, got the ball rolling. So for now, go check out blogtalkradio.com/ABPN. And you can listen to all of those shows and more on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. And yeah, in about a couple days, look at almightyballer.com and bask in the glory that is the website. Anyways, yeah. Michael.
I even think in a couple of days, hopefully, the Article Factory should be turning again.
Yeah. The Article Factory has yet to churn in a little while. I should just teach you how to do admin stuff.
That would make life easier.
Yeah. I think there's just a document I sent Mitch, so I can just send it to you.
Word. Because, yeah, I mean, Mitch does a great job, but I know he's got stuff going on.
Yeah. So I think he's going to host CapCast. Have I shown you the artwork for that?
No, but you should. But anyways.
It's Sam Hinkie. It's great. I'll show it to you after the show.
Oh, excellent. Mitch is great. Shouts out to Big Mitt.
Okay, so yeah, thanks for listening to my little shout out there. We won't advertise on this podcast because I appreciate the listener. Well, I'm going to put in the blog talk advertisements, but we won't do any live reads because I appreciate you guys listening to me talk about the network for a little bit, and I appreciate you checking it out, and I love you so much. And speaking of loving so much, NBA basketball.
We got games.
Yeah, we love it so much, and we're going to start with the Pistons versus the Celtics. Lux, number one takeaway.
Man, the Pistons looked good tonight.
Yeah, you tend to look good when you hit all your
shots. Across the board, yeah. It just sort of shows that, like, the ceiling for this team, if they can get everything going, is pretty high for the Pistons when everything's working. It's just that hasn't been the case consistently this season. But, like, tonight we saw the Kentavious Caldwell-Pope that I'm a huge fan of, hitting shots off screens, playing good defense, getting to his spots. We saw
Michael Petras
a little bit.
Yeah.
We saw...
Michael Petras was, like, I think he might have been All-NBA defense one year.
Is that true?
I don't know.
Well, we can look it up. but we, you know...
The point is the old Orlando Magic.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we saw them fill in the exact sort of... Exactly what Stan Van wants out of these, like, one-in-four-out teams.
Mm-hmm.
With Drummond playing the Dwight role, and they were taking shots from over the court. It opened up space for Ish to get into the lane. If there's one thing Ish Smith is really good at, it's making the right play once he's near the basket. And he did
unless it's trying to make a layup. Well, he does lay it up. He just misses it. It is the right play.
Right. He makes good reads. He's just not always the best at finishing. And he was on top of his game. Great work from Marcus Morris tonight. It was just an all around really excellent performance from the Pistons. And the Celtics did not play badly. Like, the Celtics were able to hang in with a Pistons team firing on all cylinders, but, like, you know, eventually there just wasn't enough. They just didn't have the horses to keep going.
Yeah, you know, I think that this may very well be a case of, you know, the NBA being a hit or miss league, right? I mean, the Pistons, you probably can't predict them to go 45% from three with this lineup. Probably can't predict them to get 55%, but I mean, when you have a coach like Stan Van Gundy, he's going to put you in opportunities. He's going to give you the chance to score. You know, he's gonna drop the right stuff. It's like, are you skilled enough to do it? And tonight, they definitely were. And hey, I just want to mention really quick, what is more Rashard/Hedo Turkoglu, right? Going with the old Orlando Magic thing, right? Than Tobias Harris and Marcus Morris combining for 41 points. 20 points and 21.
Yeah.
That's classic.
Yeah, and then then they also get the 20 from Pope, right? And they got like 16 from Ish.
25
like
from Pope.
25 from Pope, yeah. They just looked so good.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is the thing with the Pistons though, right? Is that we've seen flashes of what this could be for seasons on end. And we've been waiting for them to put together a season where like this is sort of obviously 55% of the field, 45% from three is never gonna be their baseline, but like this sort of game being their baseline performance is sort of what we've been waiting for. And obviously this doesn't indicate any kind of long-term stuff, but it's just nice to see like, oh, this is why every season everyone's like, oh, this year the Pistons are going to make it.
Well, jump. You know, so I think it does indicate some long-term stuff. This is a team where its primary facilitator is Ish Smith. And in the past, teams with Ish Smith as the primary facilitator have been the Pelicans last year during like a 19-loss streak. The 76ers during the worst season, or tied for the worst season ever, I think, in NBA history. You're not supposed to have a good team with Ish Smith, but they've sort of realized that, and they create so much of their offense through Drummond, which is interesting, and through Tobias Harris. And then Marcus Morris, what's up with that? I mean, we were talking, like, he's the better...
He's been the better Morris since they broke up.
It's weird.
Right, and Markieff was the alpha in Phoenix, but since they've broken up, I feel like Marcus has been... I mean, maybe it's because of that. Maybe Alpha Twin Markieff has a harder time sort of figuring out how to fit into the team structure.
Markieff just doesn't play basketball.
Marcus,
well.
You know, Marcus is used to being ordered around by his domineering twin brother, and so he finds it easier to fit into like a pretty like a system like Stan Van's. And that's not shots at Marcus really. Like it's good. He's great. He's found a way to like really excel in a way that Markieff has been looking for since he got to the Wizards.
Yeah, he's not done that yet.
No.
I do not like watching him play basketball. But the crazy thing about Marcus Morris is that he, last year he had some type of ridiculous, he was one of the best mid-range shooters in the league, right? He all of a sudden showed a propensity to be able to create off the dribble, which he had never shown in Phoenix. You know, he had a decent three-point shooting year. I mean, he wasn't like a knockdown shooter, but I mean, you almost expect him to be better from three than he was last year. And, I mean, that's something that is just incredibly crucial to this Pistons team. I mean, you see the effect not only in percentages, but the effect in terms of how things run so much better when Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is knocking down his shots from deep. I mean,
well, right, when you have,
if you can export that to the small forward position, too, with Morris, that'd be huge.
When your wings, and particularly your wings and your four, are hitting threes, it forces sort of the auxiliary rebounding squad away from the basket. Which then means it's like a one-on-one box-out rebound matchup for Drummond, and...
He wins.
Yeah, generally, that's a matchup that Drummond's going to win, and we saw him get a bunch of tip slams or offensive rebounds that reset the offense, and different ways of just, like, by having a little bit of space and just go bang with Al Horford or Kelly Olynyk or whoever it was, he was able to come up with a lot of plays that, like, really helped swing the outcome of the game.
Yeah, and we can switch over to the other side of the aisle now and talk about the Celtics a little bit. I mean, the Pistons... Oh, God. Knicks' Brandon Jennings dares Ricky Rubio to take a wide-open three, decides to pass to Cat instead. All right, whatever.
Well, that's not the first time.
Yeah, so the Celtics, you know, I didn't really go into this game saying, I wonder who's going to win, and trying to pick one team or the other. But especially when the Pistons are hitting their three-pointers, it seems like a terrible mismatch for the Celtics because they just got completely owned when it comes to rebounding for this game. They had a 19-rebound differential.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That's crazy. That's a lot of rebounds.
That's a lot of rebounds. And it's a mismatch for the Celtics in a number of ways, because part of what the Celtics do very well, as we've discussed, I think, on this podcast and other places before, like, is create spacing with shooters and with movement. But the Pistons are sort of willing to give up sort of mid-range lanes and interior lanes because they trust Drummond to defend the basket. And they're willing to put pressure on those outside shooters, which makes life a lot harder for Boston as far as, like, generating offense in the way that they want to. Like, they have players who can score off the drive and create their shots in those situations. Obviously, Isaiah Thomas, Crowder can sometimes, stuff like that. But it's not their ideal mode of point creation.
Well, I mean, their ideal mode of point creation is that they hit their shots. And they got, I mean, they got some good looks against the Pistons tonight. I think the Celtics undershot.
What was their percentages?
35.7, but I didn't see a really heavily contested, except for Isaiah Thomas in the corner, during like the second quarter or something like that. I didn't see a really strongly contested 3-point shot from the Celtics. A lot of stuff that was above the break, though. Not a lot of corner action. But it was all kick-out stuff. It was all from the inside out. A lot of the times because Drummond was there, right? But you're supposed to hit more like that. But, I mean, Avery Bradley just had a terrible shooting night. Isaiah Thomas carried his load just as he always does. But, I mean, Avery Bradley shot 4 for 12, and two of those shots, I believe, were in the fourth quarter. And then Marcus Smart was 4 for 14.
Well, Marcus Smart
is a bad shooter, man.
Yeah, he really went out of his way to ruin Kelly Olynyk's night, it felt like, because Kelly Olynyk made a couple of phenomenal plays to get Marcus Smart open threes, and he brickhoused all of them.
Hey, shout out Brickhouse Podcast.
Yeah, shout out Brickhouse Podcast. That's a good show. Listen to that.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from Geico.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the Geico app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the Geico app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than Geico. Geico, expect great savings and a whole lot more.
But really, he did. There was a play where Olynyk made several, like, pretty high-tech moves in a row and, like, kind of head-faked Smart open in the corner and then hit him with a beautiful pass, and then Smart, like, barely hit the rim.
There's a team that Kelly Olynyk... I really like Kelly Olynyk.
I was pretty impressed with what he did tonight.
I mean, he's one of those guys who, if he could put it together on a consistent basis... You know what, man? A consistent Kelly Olynyk, if you bring the consistency bar to its extreme, is Dirk Nowitzki.
Dirk was always a little bit more of a fluid athlete than Kelly Olynyk is.
Well, I mean, but just sort of the herky jerky like type of. I think they're pretty similar, actually.
They're similar. The herky jerky game is similar, but like their movement off the ball is pretty different. Like Dirk was pretty fluid off the ball and herky jerky with the ball. Kelly Olynyk looks like a clockwork man, whether he has the ball or not.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think it's a good comparison. I just think that, you know, I think that I just, you know, Dirk is some next level business.
Yeah, well, of course. And I mean, a lot of that is German engineering, by which I mean like coaching of footwork and stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of that is having basically worthless centers who are huge, like Jopp and Dampier, these big boys who can set big picks, and Al Horford is not Dampier sized. And, you know, if you have perfect footwork coming off of a really good screen, you're going to get a lot of really, really good shots. And that's not really something that Kelly Olynyk has had thus far in his career. Maybe if the Celtics acquired a really big center from the Kings, say, then Celtics got to get Boogie, man.
I mean, yeah, tonight was a good case for it because the Pistons were, like, daring them to go inside, like, daring them to throw it down low, and they just didn't.
Yeah, and the thing is, I really like the John Wall Boogie tandem, and they fit so well on the Kings, too, because that interior penetration would have been huge for them tonight.
Yeah, I mean, if you could find a way to get John Wall and Boogie to Boston, that would be...
They could do it, man.
I don't know.
That's what I'm going to do on NBA 2K next time I play.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, I mean, potential trades aside, I think that it did sort of show, not necessarily a fundamental weakness of Boston's team, because I think that they have some pretty good means by which they make up for some of these failures in the interior. Usually you're going to get a better shooting out of Avery Bradley. They're usually a little bit better about slashing when it's not like a Drummond in there. And Olynyk and Horford can go down low in some situations, but like it did kind of show that when those things aren't happening, Boston becomes kind of two-dimensional, those two dimensions being like hitting threes and Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, no, and it's weird how different a team that didn't have roster overhaul can be from year to year, because to me it's like you watch the Celtics now and it's like, well, you know, they always have three-point shooting from at least one of their bigs, most of the time two. They play a lot of freaking Jerebko at center, and he's near a seven-footer. He looks like a real almost seven-footer. He's the guy who you were like, is that Tyler Zeller?
Yeah, the guy I thought was a Zeller. Although they do have a Zeller.
Yeah, they have I think Tyler Zeller. Yeah. But Jerebko's tall, right? You can play him at center.
He's a big boy.
He's listed as 6'10", and I think he's a real 6'10".
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, you know, it's like, well, yeah, they took so many threes tonight. I'm going to go ahead and check how many threes they took, because they took plenty.
Yeah, it was a lot.
And a lot of them were open. Like I said, they were 15 for 42.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
That's not a lot of threes. The Rockets are leading the league right now with 37 attempts, so... Yeah,
it's not... Like, that's not a crazy number on threes. It's not even a crazy bad percentage, but it's not good enough to win when the other team is shooting the way they were.
Yeah, no, and this story could have been a lot different, and I do feel like that's worth mentioning. This wasn't, I don't think, a domineering performance, because I feel like the Celtics could have hit their shots and the Pistons could have not, and the game would have looked totally different.
Yeah, I mean, this was a real make-or-miss game. I mean, both teams, I thought, executed really well on offense for the most part, as far as doing what they were setting out to do.
Yeah.
And the Pistons did a little bit better.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like I said, the Celtics didn't go down low or bang down there, but they didn't want to do that. Like, that wasn't... They were like, those are bad possessions for us. That's not what they wanted.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know what I think... What I think ultimately won this game? It was the rebounding, I think. Because... Yeah. That's what the Celtics could have done. And I mean, that's what you want with like all the 3-point shooters that they have all across the floor is someone. I mean, can you imagine Drummond on the Celtics, man?
Right. I mean, it would have been a lot of what we saw tonight, like just scooping up sort of longish rebounds that he can cut off before they get too far from the basket and then just go back up with them.
Right. Yeah. No, exactly. And I mean, Stan Van Gundy, though, this makes the Pistons 10-10. So he's kept them at 500, right? Without Reggie Jackson, starting Ish Smith. I think that this Pistons team, everyone was like, oh man, the Pistons are going to break out, and then Reggie Jackson went down, and I think people have cooled off on them. But Reggie Jackson's going to come back, and the Pistons bench was terrible tonight, by the way. The starters accounted for 105 out of the 121 points that the Pistons scored. So it was really, really bad, the Pistons bench. But once you get Reggie Jackson back, your starters become a lot better, right? Because you have Reggie Jackson instead of Ish Smith, right? And then your bench unit can now start to just revolve around Ishmith pick and rolls with, I'm crossing my fingers for Boban, but I mean,
the Baines guy, or whoever.
Yeah, Baines is getting the minutes. And then John Luehr for kickouts. And yeah. And Ishmith is good at that.
Yeah. They
and that could be a really effective strategy off the bench.
Team composition makes a lot more sense when you factor in Reggie Jackson as like a part of it.
Right.
Like every single component of their team makes a lot more sense in where they are once you remember that there is like this other point guard that exists.
Who's a lot better.
Yeah, who's substantially
better. But tonight,
better.
I think Reggie Jackson missed, I mean, not Reggie, Ishmith, I think, missed one shot. So.
No, Ish had himself a game.
We're about to find out how much.
I think he missed twice.
Yeah, 9 for 12.
Oh, so, 3 times.
Oh, and 8 rebounds and 8 assists.
Yeah, Ish had himself a game.
Yeah.
He was all over the court. He had a bunch of really good reads, especially there was a stretch where it looked like the Celtics were going to get back in it. There were a couple of those. And
yeah, there were.
He hit a couple leaners in the lane and then set up a pair of back-to-back threes that I think, and there were a couple of things in between, but he made a couple of plays like that that sort of got the lead back out to 7 or 8. And that makes a huge difference.
Well, yeah, you know,
like
actually...
That helped shut down, like, some major momentum.
Well, so going into the fourth quarter, the Celtics, right off the bat, had a 10-point run. And then, basically, the Pistons put back in their starters and then went on a 9-point run. And it was over then, you know?
Yeah, I mean...
For the initial part of the fourth quarter, it was like bench, and then they put the starters back in and just sort of closed it out. But yeah, I mean, it's never good to have injuries, but I do think that it was almost like a worthwhile exercise for Reggie Jackson to be out because last year this team was just, I mean, Reggie Jackson had one of the highest usage rates in the league. He was top 5 in minutes played. And they just struggled to have options when he was off the court. And I think that they've sort of figured out, okay, here's stuff that we can do. Here's plays that we can run if Reggie Jackson isn't here to bail us out. And, oh, yeah, we have talent outside of Reggie. So
yeah, I mean, it's nice seeing Caldwell Pope get opportunities to sort of expand his game. He'd be a really good player. He's nice coming off screens. He's got a little bit of a handle. He's a very good defender. And he sort of could evolve into sort of the exact 3-and-D wing that you want, who can even make some plays for himself. And if you add one of those, having a player like Reggie Jackson and a sort of stretchy kind of four along the Marcus Morris lines and a slasher like Tobias, and then obviously Drummond just like eating cars for breakfast in the middle, you have what amounts to a pretty diverse and effective offensive starting five.
So DNP coach's decision, Stanley Johnson. He's not been super hot so far this year.
Yeah, that's a big surprise to me. I was very high on him coming into the season. I'm not sure what's going on with him. I just feel like he has all the physical skills, and last season he was playing pretty well for some stretches, and he's just been like donuts this year.
Yeah, no, I mean, I never had a really good grip on him. I'm not really willing to say like one way or the other. I haven't studied him enough. I don't know enough information on the subject, but it is troubling, no doubt. I think he was supposed to be the guy in the future next to Tobias Harris. But, I mean, this team, you know, it has pieces. It has time to figure stuff out. They have a coach who should be able to find gems. I mean, he basically did that up and down the roster. Marcus Morris, right? No one thought that he would be a starter. He went and picked up Reggie Jackson, paid him a ton of money. Everyone was like, ha, you idiot. And then it's like, yeah, Reggie, you deserve that money. Everyone knew Andre Drummond was dope. But, I mean, I think that they can figure it out, even if Stanley Johnson isn't the player who we hoped that he would be. But it is a little bit discouraging.
Yeah, it really is, because it's... It's just weird to see a guy with like those sort of physical abilities and the sort of on-court awareness that he displayed and his like kind of willingness to do the dirty work just like hanging out on the bench.
Yeah, yeah. And you know who would fit really well, man, is a player. All right, you can figure this out. A player who played in the next game that we're going to talk about.
Okay.
So fit really well instead of Marcus Morris.
Instead of Marcus Morris. Marcus Morris fits really well. I'm trying to think about who in the games that we play.
Heat or the Nuggets?
Oh, Jokic? Or you...
Well, no, they've got Drummond.
Oh, yeah, I guess Jokic plays at the five. Fareed? Gallinari?
Yeah. Dude, Danilo would be swag.
Yeah, Gallo would be good. I just feel like, I don't know, I like what Marcus Morris brings in terms of, like, his without the ball stuff a little more than Danilo in terms of, like, that team.
Sure.
Like, I think Morris, like, a little bit better screen, like, makes a couple more of those, like, dirty on the ground plays. Danilo Gallinari is sort of, like, floating around, like, looking for daggers, which isn't a bad thing.
Yeah.
But it's just a different thing, and I think they have some of that already.
Also,
on that
Wilson Chandler's having an awesome season and doing a lot of the stuff that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Also, apparently an awesome guy, so...
Yeah, I believe it.
Whatever. The Nuggets are going to want someone younger to pair with Tobias Harris anyways. So, Wilson Chandler, 18.3 points a game is what he's averaging.
Is this our segue to talking about Nuggets?
7.7 rebounds. Dude, Wilson Chandler is averaging 18 points, 18.5 points, and 8 rebounds.
Yeah.
Wilson Chandler, man.
Wilson Chandler, what? I guess we're talking about Nuggets heat now.
The natural segue you want to talk about?
I don't think we missed anything with the Celtics game. I think we got all my notes in.
Yeah. We've talked a lot about the Celtics recently. If you haven't listened to my podcast with Snotty Drippin, a.k.a. James Hollis, who's wrong about whether or not the Celtics should get Boogie, I should write an article about it or something.
You should. Just get out of your system because you can't leave it alone.
God, dude. Avery Bradley, John Wall.
Okay.
Probably have to trade Jay Crowder.
Yeah, you probably trade Avery Bradley too.
No. No way.
To get both of them?
Okay, we'll figure it out.
Yeah,
right?
This is not the time nor the place.
Yeah, it's time for Denver versus Miami. Hey, Miami won 106-98. Also not a dominant performance, but...
Well,
I sort of had the feeling that the Heat were going to win the whole time. That was just me, though.
It felt that way because, I mean, this was, I don't, by no means is this like a earth-shaking, incisive observation, but just like, the Heat were really willing, too much like the Pistons, play pretty far away from the paint and put a lot of pressure on the perimeter for the Nuggets because Whiteside was pretty dominant on the interior tonight, and by putting the kind of pressure on sort of the youngish perimeter players, particularly the guards, Jamal Murray, Emmanuel Mudiay, or Jameer Nelson, who's not young but is older and slower and has a harder time with pressure as well.
Yeah, sure.
They were able to really disrupt Denver's offense. There were stretches where they were able to run and avoid that pressure and get a lot of points, or Mudiay was able to sort of see through things and make some pretty pinpoint impressive passes and get things going. And in those moments, Denver like really seemed to be in control, but they never lasted more than 3-4 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
And when that wasn't the case, they really had nothing going on.
And I would be willing to assume that those minutes were when Whiteside was on the bench.
Some, but not all. Like the Mudiay stretch was on the 4-4.
But so how many turnovers do you think Nuggets had? 19. That's a lot.
It was 13-2 last time. The last time I checked.
Yeah. So 6 turnovers from Miami, and that's pretty good for considering the way that I think the Heat have to not grind out offense, but it's not natural, right?
Right. There's not an intuitive source on their roster.
Right. So only having 6 rebounds is pretty good. Denver 19 rebounds, not so great. Bad.
19 turnovers.
Yeah, what did I say?
Rebounds, but it doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah. They had 55 rebounds to Miami's 41.
Yeah, I mean, they did a good job on the boards, particularly controlling their own. But, yeah, they just turned the ball over a ton, and that cost them huge. Like, there was... I mean, I think the emblematic play in that respect was Wayne Ellington getting pretty far in the paint to poke away a ball from... I think it was Jamal Murray...
Yeah, I think it was...
I'm not sure.
Are you thinking about that fourth quarter play?
Yeah, he poked away, got it to Dragic, got it back to him. Or no, Tyler Johnson, he got it back to him. Then he hit the three, and that was sort of the game-sealing three.
Yeah.
And also what happened in the sequence, that was because, like, high-pressure defense,
high pressure defense, and just like a failure on the exterior from Denver, and at the same time, you know, all sort of this perfect confluence of Denver's turnovers, they're getting nervous, and Miami's like, you know, they have some guys who can hit shots.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
when they're open, which is hard for them to get in the flow of the offense, but on the break, it's sort of easier.
Well, so sitting out for this game was the big one, right? And we talked about this. Justice Winslow was sort of a poison pill for their offense, and it's really hard for them to run anything functional with Winslow because they need Goran Dragic to have a good offense. But if Goran Dragic and Justin Winslow is out there, I mean, Winslow's best minutes are when he's basically operating the point, because then you can pose a threat because you have the ball in your hand, and he's not an off-ball threat whatsoever, well, pretty much. But, okay, point. Deion Waiters was out, Justice Winslow was out, and Josh Richardson was out. So they needed someone to come in on the wing and hit threes, and someone did that.
Yeah, Ellington had himself a pretty solid shooting night, 5 of 9 from three, ended up with 22 points. That's pretty dang good.
Four of those threes were in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, four of those threes were all big ones in the fourth quarter. On the Winslow thing, I do think that he is a very good cutter, and he can finish around the rim pretty all right. Yeah. I think the issue that he runs into is that because he can't shoot, because Whiteside needs to be near the rim, and they don't have a plethora of other sort of excellent shooters in the roster, he has nowhere to cut.
Yeah, no.
Which neutralizes his best offensive weapon.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, first, they, in the playoffs last year, played Justice Winslow at the four almost all the time. And if he can't develop a jump shot, he needs to play the four, because he would be a really good four. He can definitely play defense against fours. He definitely has the defensive acumen to play help defense while defending fours. And on offense, you can force rotations just by blowing past fours because he's really athletic and can do that.
He's smart. He makes really good reads as far as like figuring out where to make his cuts.
Yeah, but as of right now, as a sophomore, right, you know, he doesn't have a jump shot and he is not playing power forward, which is probably the right decision. Or he does play some power forward minutes, but not a lot of them. Today they started Josh McRoberts, who was awful, -6, but 0-for-4, just not, like, didn't really do anything. Josh McRoberts should just be done, probably.
Yeah, I think we're nearing the end of the McRoberts era. I like McRoberts. There was a stretcher who was one of my favorite players to watch.
Yeah, dude, remember when I was like, man, McRoberts is going to be good for the Heat. McRoberts is really good. You remember that?
Yeah.
When we were... You owe me a Whiteside jersey.
And I got to figure out where to get one. That is good.
I mean, part of the reason I believe that is because, you know, I really like, which Johnson is it? It's James Johnson, yeah.
James Johnson or Tyler Johnson, because they're both
James good. Johnson. Well, I like him at power forward more than I like...
sure.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think that they have, you know, I mean, especially, you know, in the starting lineup, you know, they have enough playmaking, and I think at this point, James Johnson is a better shooter, honestly, than McRoberts is. So James Johnson just seems better at everything that they would need Josh McRoberts to be good at. He did play 33 minutes to McRoberts' 16, so maybe that's reflected. One thing I was going to ask, right, and we bring up hypothetical, and by we, I mean I, bring up hypothetical trade situations all the time. But Bradley Beal would fit really, really well on the Heat.
Sure.
You know what I
Bradley
mean?
Bradley Beal would fit really, really well on, like, the vast majority of basketball
teams. Yeah, but, like, really, really
well. But, yeah, he would fit a very distinct need on the Heat, for sure.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest-growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO, expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Yo, everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
I would like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't as much.
Oh, yeah. Well, what do you want?
I would like.
Is there anything that he could give you that you would want? What if you could get Justice Winslow out of it?
If the Wizards could get Hassan Whiteside out of it, I'd be okay with that discussion.
Stop. Don't say that. Dude, Whiteside is valuable. Whiteside is good as heck.
Yeah, that's why he's something that, that's why he's what I want out of a Beal trade.
like that's, so Lux is a Wizards fan, so that's why.
Or at least a Wizards sympathizer.
Yeah.
I think he's a more accurate.
Sympathizer's good. I'm a Maverick sympathizer. Our sympathizations are more on the pathos side, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm pathetic, very much a pathos guy when it comes to basketball.
17.3 points a game, 15.1 rebounds, and 2.5 blocks. And also, the Heat, going into this, and the broadcasters talked about this, the Heat broadcasters, who are great broadcasters, really like them. The Heat were second at opposing field goal at the rim, right? So they were the second best rim protecting team in the league. And plus, like, they can blitz outside shooters because they have Whiteside, right? So they just have a really good defense, right? Top five.
I mean, we saw
top
that.
10, top five.
We saw that sort of on the last, like, meaningful Nuggets possession of the game.
That
they,
block.
They went for a steal on Murray. He made a really nice move to get by his man, got towards the basket, and then Whiteside just, like, unhinged his jaw and swallowed him whole.
Whiteside is a preternatural blocker. Some of his blocks, man. We should watch. Right. The listeners should go right now and just open up like Hassan Whiteside blocks.
I complain about him keeping his hands down, and you see the problems with that in certain places. But then you also see on plays like that Murray block, the fact that his reflexes are so good, and he's so athletic that he makes up for the majority of the problems with keeping his hands. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He gets probably a couple extra fouls here and there because his hands aren't up, but it's not like it stops from being able to block shots or contest because he gets them up so fast.
Yeah, and I mean, we were talking about, and I meant purely in terms of defensive impact because offensively he's a little bit different than the comparison we made is if Whiteside would not have his spacey Whiteside moments, right? He would be pretty much the caliber of defender as Dwight Howard during the Orlando years where he won 3 DPOYs in a row. But I mean, Whiteside, like, I mean, if he paid 100% attention, right? Say you put Kevin Garnett in Whiteside's body with his skill set.
Yeah, I mean that would be good.
He'd be ferocious.
That would be very, very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about Whiteside's offensive stuff too, because I think it's not meaningless, right? I think that my thing with Whiteside right now is that I just sort of wish he would have a little more diversified low post game.
Look, you know, the Heat Beat recently, and shout out Heat Beat, our Miami Heat A-Team podcast.
Whoop whoop.
We've had a lot of great shout-outs on this podcast.
Yeah, we're doing a great job of shouting out.
Shout out Flagrant Take.
How great we're doing at podcasting, and we are doing a good job at shouting out.
I think this was a good podcast.
Yeah, I think we're doing fine.
Yeah, we've had some valuable analysis. So the Heat Beat podcast, which I actually, you know, on second thought, I'm not sure if they're joining the network. I hope they do.
I hope so, too. Shouts out to the Heat Beat podcast.
Yeah, either way, shout out you guys. I hope you join the network. Anyways, they had a podcast recently where they were just basically talking about all things Whiteside, and it seemed like the feeling was that they ultimately got down to is, like, sort of similar to what the gripes are with Russell Westbrook, like, except probably more people like Russell than dislike Russell, but it's just, like, he does so much, and yeah, he could be better, and it would be easy for him to be better. He would just need to be smarter and not do dumb things, but he does them, well, but he's so good, you know, it is what it is.
That's not even that's not entirely my thing. Like, so here's a statistic that I think is meaningful as far as my thing about, like, diversity of offense, right? So with zero dribbles, he's shooting 58%, and that's 73% of his shots.
Mm-hmm.
With one dribble, he's shooting 51%, that's 20% of his shots. With two dribbles, he's shooting 38%, and that's 6% of his shots. And it's this question of, like, can we get that two dribble number up both in terms of frequency and percentage? Because then that sort of shows me that he has the ability to create offense somewhat on his own.
Do you want, like, a center creating offense in the modern NBA?
I think that on the Heat with the roster they have, they probably do.
I think with Goran Dragic at point, probably not.
But this isn't the Goran Dragic that we all like. Like, this is Goran Dragic post fall off.
Goran Dragic is having a good year.
This is like post Eminem show Goran Dragic.
What do you mean post Eminem show?
After the Eminem show, Eminem got not that good.
Oh, okay.
Dragic hasn't been the same dude.
He's 16.3 points, 6.6 assists. He's having one of the better seasons of his career.
A couple years ago, this guy was third team All-NBA.
He's shooting 40% from three.
A couple years ago, this dude was all third team All-NBA and was a Mondo beast.
Okay.
Like, this isn't that Goran Dragic. And I think that...
He's averaging... Yeah, well, whatever. He's really close.
Yeah, I mean, he's all right. He's not bad, but he's not the same sort of, like, this is your offense, Goran Dragic, that he was with the Spurs, or the Suns, rather.
Well, I think for this team, especially considering the slower pace, because they're one of the slower teams in the league, he is. If you adjust for pace, 16.5 on this Heat team is about the same as 20.3 on that Phoenix team. And 6.6 assists is about the same as in that All-Star year, his, let's see, where is it? Set 5.9.
I just, like, I don't know. I find that debatable, especially just because, like,
I think I've watched probably more Heat games than you have.
I think that's probably true, but I've watched a fair amount of them, and he's definitely not, like, he gets his points, he gets his numbers, but he doesn't get them the same way that he used to. Like, he doesn't split up the defense, he doesn't, like, find gaps in the same way, he's more on the perimeter, he's hitting shots, sure, but he's not, like, forcing teams to, like, totally, like, he's not collapsing the teeth of the defense the same way he used to.
Do you know what his last game line was?
No, not off the top of my head. But
this is 27 points and 17 assists.
That's not responsive.
Not, what do you mean not responsive?
It's not responsive to the... Like, yeah, I...
No, I'm just saying he's capable of having really good performances.
Yeah, totally. He's not dead. He's a living Goran Dragic. But my point is that, like, he's not the same, like, defense-bending Goran Dragic that he was. Like, he's still a totally functional and probably above-average NBA point guard, but he's not the same guy as far as, like, forcing the defense to adapt to him that he used to be. And because of that, they can sort of settle on him a little bit more and settle on other dudes a little bit more. And so if you want, like, I think what I want to see, and I was saying this, and we saw it because there were a couple plays where Whiteside actually took a couple dribbles and made some crazy good plays tonight. Like, the potential's there for him to be able to, like, take two dribbles and hit a hook shot or take two dribbles and get to the rim. Because he's such a crazy athlete. And I think that if he can start getting that touch-based, like, post-game a little bit further from the rim, then I think that he could be, so good.
I mean, okay, so, like, give me a player composition. I can't really... I'm having trouble envisioning the type of thing that you're talking about.
I mean, like, obviously this is, like, a crazy one, but, like, Anthony Davis can do that shit, right? Karl-Anthony Towns is that shit.
Don't say bad words.
Sorry. Anthony Davis does that stuff. Karl-Anthony Towns does that stuff. I mean, Porzingis sort of does that stuff.
No, I just mean, like, are you talking about, like, a face-up game from top of the key? Are you talking about, like...
So, if he could get 8 to 10 feet from the basket and hit these sort of soft hook shots and touch shots that he's inconsistent on, not, like, terrible, but he's inconsistent on
so
now.
So, if you could add the Julius Okafor, Tim Duncan type of game.
Yeah.
Okay.
If he can work some of that in, then he'd be a, like I was saying before, like, I see him and I see him putting up, like, what is it, like 17 and 15 or something a game right now?
Yeah, 17.3, 15.1.
Yeah, and it's like, that's amazing. But it's like, you can watch him play and you can see him being, like, 22, 15 and like 3 blocks a game.
Yeah.
And with not that much of an adjustment. And he clearly has like the capacity, you know what I mean? And well, it's not like a, he does dumb thing stuff. It's that I think that some things come so easily to him that he doesn't, like, you know. I mean, it's just the team or whatever it is, but you don't see him doing that stuff a lot.
So, to be fair, right, like, he was an awful free throw shooter, and he got it up to, like, 78%, right?
Right.
During the second half of the season, right? And he developed a mid-range jump shot, and he stopped stat hunting on blocks, and he turned into number one, number two, or number three best rim protectors in the league. Like, he is hyper elite. Like,
right, so that's
just, are
those
you
are
asking,
all those are all reasons why it's totally reasonable to assume that he will make another progression as far as his game goes.
No, I mean,
and that, like, he should do so.
Yeah, no, he should, but, like, you know,
I'm not saying he's bad. He's clearly good.
A lot, like, of players should do things.
I feel, you like, you're getting defensive as though he's, like, literally your biological child. Like, it's not me saying that he's not good, just that there's clearly a component to his game that this team, his team right now, could use. And that would take him from this, like you were saying before, like, you compared him to Dwight Howard, except we're, like, have this caveat that, like, he doesn't have, like, sort of the offensive power, firepower sort of stuff going on. But, like, he could.
Yeah.
With those changes. Like, he can get that good. And so it's sort of, A, scary, and B, a little frustrating to be, like, because then you see these flashes, like, tonight. Like, that's what I'm talking about. It's, like, tonight there were two back-to-back possessions where he hit, like, sort of, like, dipped his shoulder, ducked around, took a power dribble, and hit these hook shots over, I think it was Fareed, on back-to-back possessions, and it was just like, dang, dude.
No, Dang's on the Lakers now.
Lol. it was just like, dang, bro, like, that's phenomenal. Like, that was awesome, and it makes him that much harder to defend, and makes him that much more of a presence, and it just seems like that's the next logical step for what Whiteside could become, and, like, the Whiteside that can do that is a nightmare.
Well, so I agree with you. Anytime a player can just spontaneously create skill sets, that's great. And he's shown a propensity to do it. It's like, I don't think we have a fundamental disagreement. I think that our disagreement is more along the lines of, like, okay, do you want to ask even more out of Whiteside, which I'm not sure you do, especially, I mean, this is a team that I, in the future, just project to have, like, 50 really good ball handler and a pick and roll options. Like, you asked me what Tyler Johnson would be ultimately, and I said, like, something like Nate Robinson, or not the skill set but the role of, like, a Lou Williams, and then Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson both are good. I mean, Josh Richardson right now is a good pick and roll option, and then Justice Winslow, like we talked about, you hope that he's the ball handler, and if he's the ball handler in a 4-5 pick and roll, like, at the top of the key, they can both just blast to the rim, and there's just, like, nothing you can do about it, and it will be disgusting. So you have so many guys, and Goran Dragic, right? I mean, Goran Dragic is, like, the pick-and-roll hero. So, you have so many guys who you just, like, don't want to use an offensive possession just standing around, right?
Right, but I think that you...
I mean, this is a team that played... I mean, Wayne Allinson had a great game. Don't get me wrong. But they played Wayne Allinson, like...
Ellington.
Did I say... Yeah, Ellington. They played him, like, 32 minutes, right? They're desperate for shooting, right? And you don't want post-ups in a team that's desperate for shooting.
Right, they have other things to fix, but, like, it's, like... It's this question of, like... We have no shooters. What are our alternatives?
They have Magruders.
We've got Magruders, but no shooters. What are our alternatives? And that looks like a viable one. I mean, the thing is, and sort of the Nuggets sort of exemplify this, right? That, like,
okay, cool. We're transitioning to the Nuggets.
When you have a team that's sort of stuck on a couple that has, like, this is our thing that we like to do, offense, they can get jammed up by good defenses.
What do they like to do?
The Nuggets?
Yeah. They've gone with, like, 50 different rotations since the start of the season.
I feel like what they want to do is, like, drive and kick to move the defense around and then get it down low to their big men and work from there. With the defense off balance. Like, they want, like, Moutier drives, hits Gallinari hits a head fake, passes to Nurkic throws his butt into a dude, misses a layup and Fareed gets the rebound and scores is like the ideal Nuggets possession.
You know, I don't know if that's true, right? Because I mean, last year, Jokic playmaking out of the high key was the ideal Nuggets possession,
right? But we're
and recently, basically, setting up Jamal Murray it from like Steph Curry top of the 3-point line and just having him do stuff that breaks down the defense and going from there, like that's been the desired thing, right? And then you've got Emmanuel Mudiay cutting, right? There's been really ugly Nurkic post-ups, and Nurkic had like I think 57 turnovers this game, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I mean it was ugly, but like no, they basically they it seems to me, especially watching tonight,
5 turnovers,
that they tend to like settle in to patterns. Like they were at their best tonight when they were doing these like varied offensive maneuvers.
They were at their best when they were running things through Jokic. 7 of 11, right? 14 rebounds, 17 assists.
17 points.
What?
He didn't have 17 assists.
Oh, 17 points, right.
Yeah. No, I mean,
in 24
Jokic,
minutes.
Yeah, Jokic was great. And I think this conversation would be different if we saw more Jokic on the floor. But, like, the fact that they played 24 minutes is a testament to, like, whether or not what we want them to do.
Yeah.
Because what we want them to do is obviously, like, Jokic at center, Moutier and Murray at the guard positions, probably Gallinari at the 4 and Chandler at the 3.
Yeah.
And that would be an awesome lineup.
I think they should go for Eric Bledsoe.
You just want everyone to trade everyone.
I just want everyone to trade everyone. It's so true. I'm like a... I'm not a very good NBA fan. I'm a really smart NBA fan, but I'm one of those NBA fans who's just like, why doesn't everyone just do trades?
Yeah.
Bruh.
But so yeah, I mean...
I love a good trade.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, but like obviously like what we want them to do is one thing, but what they seem to want to do is a different thing. Or obviously, like we were talking before about like Mike Malone quotes and like whether we're dating or not, but like this idea that whatever reason personalities at play on yeah. their team are forcing his hand as far as Jokic goes. Whether it's him catering to front office or people on the bench or his strategy, it's obviously not the thing, not our ideal thing.
Right.
And I think that what they
I don't
seem,
think it's his either.
And maybe it's not his, but what they seem to be whether or not, they really want Fareed and Nurkic playing a big role as far as like they're starting. They were smart enough to take Nurkic out for a long stretch of this game, which was very good. They're starting Jameer, like they're playing Jameer Nelson big minutes. Like they seem more invested in the slower, sillier game. And well, the whole reason I think actually to bring back to what I was saying with Whiteside and the Heat, like the Jokic thing is really good evidence on this question, right? Because when you have that lineup we were talking about, all of a sudden your offensive options become like extraordinarily diverse.
Well, I mean, really what they're doing is they're pulling in a Dwayne Casey, except it's instead of Patrick Patterson, it's Wilson Chandler. I mean, he's averaging 18 points like off the bench, right? And Jokic, it's like, you know, it's the old switcheroo, right? Where you just have like, okay, we're going to bog it down and we're going to frustrate and annoy your starters and we're going to tire them out. And then we're going to put in our high-powered bench unit and beat you that way with Wilson Chandler and with Jokic. We're just gonna kill you, and it's gonna be great. And Jamal Murray, by the way, comes off the bench. I mean that bench unit: Jamal, Wilson Chandler, and Jokic. They're eating people alive, and that's how they want to win their games. And then they bog down starters' minutes, or they want to trade Nurkic and Fareed. But it's like the more I watch Nurkic, I understand the appeal of Nurkic. I just don't agree.
Well, I think I'm a little more pro-Nurkic than you.
He reminds me of Dwight Howard.
Yeah, well, because he's petulant.
Right.
I'm a little more pro-Nurkic than you, but I do sort of see what you mean in that, like, it's hard to envision him going to a place and then unlocking some hidden potential that we haven't seen in Denver.
I think Hornets.
He'd fit in okay with the Hornets. I don't know if he'd be, like, a better version of himself with the Hornets. I think he'd just be, like, Nurkic.
I think they...
Yeah. I mean, Clifford is good at maximizing talent, so maybe that's not true. But I just feel like...
Somewhere like that.
Yeah, yeah. But I feel like Nurkic...
Spurs. Oof.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I feel like Nurkic... Mavs? What?
Mavs.
Maybe. Yeah. If he goes to a team with a really good coach who's great at developing players, like, it's possible he'll...
That's the thing.
He'll really do better. Coach. But Malone, it's tough to get a good read on Malone. Just with all these, like, extra weird variables floating around this team.
Is it? I think Malone is not a great coach. and not a terrible coach, and that's what he's going to be forever.
Well, I thought that he was pretty solid in Sacramento until Boogie went down.
Pretty solid, yeah.
All right, fair enough.
I mean, I think he's going to be somewhere in the middle 10. So not top 10, not bottom 10, forever.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair enough. That's probably a reasonable assessment. I think he might have a little greater upside than that, but yeah, I mean, as of right now, that's definitely, it seems like an accurate way of putting it.
Napa know-how.
A Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space, a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how!
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite.
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
I just think, like, it's, you know, Nurkic could go somewhere and maybe be a little bit better, but it is hard to say, to see, like, a, I don't know, like, what's a good example of someone who gets traded and then just, like, went buckaroo bonanzas? Like, right away. Like, new scene.
Harrison Barnes, he was a signing, but same thing.
Yeah, like a Harrison Barnes situation where they can, like, blossom in, like, a new environment.
Yeah.
Into a different way. I just don't really see that possibility with Nurkic.
James Harden.
Harden, sure. That's a better example. Like, I just don't see that with Nurkic in the same way. And that's a little problematic, presumably, for the Nuggets, who want to trade him, because other teams feel that way. They're like, well, what we see is what we get, and what we see is, like, 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
That also raises the question, well, this is more of a Freed question, which is something we were talking about earlier that I think is interesting, that I wouldn't mind getting back into, is this idea that, like, so for the players from, like, the George Karl era, the Gallinaris, the Chandlers, the Farids, how much of their sort of, like, self-understanding as a player do you think is tied to those results? Like, Farid's never been as good as he was then when they were, like, running and gunning and amazing with Karl.
Well, I think Farid is the quintessential guy, because Gallinari, I'm not sure if he was ever an all-star in New York, but he was awfully close, and Wilson Chandler has been good.
Yeah, and so is Gallinari.
Wait, did I say Gallinari?
No, Chandler's been good. You said Gallinari was an all-star in New York, and Chandler's been good.
Yeah.
I'm saying Gallinari also been...
So, like, Kenneth Farid, I think, is the quintessential
example for this, yeah.
Yeah. Is there anyone else left over from that era? I mean, they pretty much had a purge, I mean, after the whole... vacation on six or whatever, 6 weeks.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 6 weeks, you know?
Yeah, that was rough.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, after that, they just were like, all right, you malcontents, Ty Lawson, get out of here.
Yeah.
You know? Although he's been great off the bench for Sacramento, so that's weird. But yeah, Nurkic is odd. That's the thing, though, right? When they were under George Karl, it worked out, right? I mean, Kenneth Farid, the reason why I want to put him on the Celtics is, like, clearly fits a need. Or the Hawks, really good coach, stable environment, organizational functionness. It's like they're good. You know, they've got like a degree of credibility, right? Their coach isn't going to get fired. Mike Malone is not. I mean, Mike Malone has time, right? He's not on the hot seat, but I mean, if they don't make the playoffs a year from now, you could totally get fired, right? Brad Stevens not going to get fired. Steve Clifford not going to get fired. So it's got to be a situation like that, and they've got to be good fits on top of it, and that's why it's so hard to trade a guy like that.
And then, and like I said, I think this goes back to what I was saying before about this whole, like, self-image as a player thing. Like, on those teams, like, what's his role? And it's going to be less.
Nurkic wants to start, and he is maybe not a starter.
Yeah, and Farid wants to start, and he's maybe not a starter. And Farid has this, like, backup of, well, don't you remember that really great Nuggets team I was on where I was starting and I was so good?
I have a gold medal. He has a gold medal.
Yeah, he does. And so he has that sort of that self-image that comes largely from those Carl years. And those Carl years were a super fast team playing in a unique environment, as in like Denver's like, you know, thin oxygen, entire team's out because like they can't breathe enough air.
Yeah.
Environment.
Who's the center on that team? JaVale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was JaVale, but Fareed has a self-image that I think would make it hard for him to be a role player.
And Mozgov.
Yeah. It would make it hard for him to be a role player on your Hawks, your Celtics, your Hornets. Like, it would be tough to like, get him to accept that role,
well,
I think.
Well, I said Hornets because I think he could potentially step in and start. I have my suspicions about whether or not Zeller on the Hornets is... I mean, he's definitely underrated, but it might be a system thing. You know what I mean? He has tons of screen assists, but he just runs around setting screens. Like, if that's what Nurkic did, I mean, he would be better at it, probably.
Well, Nurkic would do better than I think Fareed would. Although, I mean, yeah, Nurkic would fit in well there, although Nurkic isn't quite as, like, quick as Zeller. Nurkic kind of lumbers.
This is why the Nuggets have been sort of in this position for a really long time, and it's good to see them get Jamal Murray. I'm not sure if we talked a lot about the rookies. I know we did with like Vecini and stuff, but shout out Sam Vecini. But I mean, I think Jamal Murray is going to be like a top three, top four player in this draft, right? And I think he's going to be like a Bradley Beal without injuries.
Yeah, I mean, he was hit or miss tonight, but when he was on, he looked really great.
Yeah, well, and I just mean his skill set. I mean, the fact that he got 20 points a game at Kentucky as a freshman, like, he was playing, like, 30 minutes on a Kentucky team. Like, Karl-Anthony Towns couldn't play 30 minutes on a Kentucky team. Because they have so much depth. They normally just play all their guys
in 15
minutes.
They usually sign, like, 46 big men and a guard.
Well, but Jamal Murray was, like, running the show for Kentucky, and, I mean, that's meaningful. And the reports... Shout out Adam Mares of the Locked On Nuggets podcast. You know, he talks about it on his podcast a lot. Like, you know, it's not a toxic type of, okay, Moutier, you know, you're not the leader, right? It's more of a, okay, Moutier, like, that's just not your bag. Like, that's not what his personality is. And Jamal Murray talks a big game. Jamal Murray's like, I'm a point guard. I'm a shooting guard. I could probably play shoot center. I don't give a crap. Like, see, I censored myself there. It's cool that they got a guy like him because they have all of these weird mismatched pieces like Nurkic. I got the train back on the rails there. They have all these weird mismatched pieces like Nurkic and Fareed, who it's like, you know, what type of trade do you pull off for that? I mean, who? There's like three teams who need those players.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, the roster feels kind of hybridized, if only in this sort of, like... Well, Brian Shaw wanted to slow things down last year, right? Wasn't that sort of Brian Shaw's deal?
I have no idea what Brian Shaw wanted.
I feel like he wanted to slow things down, if I remember correctly, and, like, be a little more DE. And...
He was bad.
Yeah, and he was a bad coach, and that was a bad choice.
He's an assistant coach for the Lakers, and I think that, you know, Luke Walton, as an assistant coach... made the Warriors what they were, so it logically follows that...
Did Luke Walton as an assistant make the Warriors what they were? Because they're 16-2.
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. But anyways, say your point.
I think that some remnants of that are left over, and that they haven't had, like, a clear organizational vision since, like, the Carl era.
Yeah.
And they have the pieces to put together a really good modern NBA team, like a modern NBA core in Jokic and Murray and Moutier, but they haven't sort of focused on that as their core, and rather they've sort of seemed to be more focused on complementing this older core of like Fareed and Gallinari and Chandler, who aren't bad, and Chandler and Gallinari definitely have a place in this like futuristic version of this team.
Yeah, I mean, I think they want to pull off a big trade, and they're always out fishing for it, but they just don't. They've got, like, nice stuff, you know? But, I mean, Jamal Murray is really what you want to be shooting for right now. Like, you need to find your internal star. I know you got burnt before. I know Carmelo did you dirty. But you need to, like, move on and just, like, draft your next star. Get Gallinari. I mean, like, Gallinari, man. You trade Gallinari for all sorts of things, right? I mean, the Celtics have called about Gallinari a lot. Like, you know, you could trade... I mean, everyone wants Gallo, right? Wilson Chandler's been amazing. I could see Wilson Chandler just all of a sudden ending up on the Cavaliers and being the guy who hits the game-sealing three in Game 7 against the Warriors after they've blown out the 3-1 lead.
I mean, yeah, that's the thing, is they've got pieces and they've got the parts to make this core. It's like, it's
weird.
They
need to do a full rebuild. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they just seem unwilling to commit to that.
Yeah.
And it's hurting them in more ways than one, because if you put out that lineup that we talked about earlier, that Jokic, Moutier, Murray, Gallo, Chandler lineup,
yeah,
that's the best environment for Jokic to figure out how to be a pace and space center, for Moutier to figure out how to exploit his, like, there are some things Moutier is good at and things he's bad at. The things he's good at, he's tremendously good at. And that's, I think that is
tremendously good.
Yeah, absolutely. He's so fast. He's so explosive. When you're wrong. Your reaction is wrong. He's very fast. He's very explosive. He's crazy strong for his size.
Yeah.
When he makes the right read, he throws passes beautifully.
Yes.
And like all those things, he's very, very good at. Figuring out how to maximize those skills is much, much harder when the floor is real crowded.
Yeah.
When the floor is open, you can figure out how Moutier maximizes those skills to become a very useful player. Murray has a skill set that can excel in sort of any setting, but it's going to be best when the floor is open because he's got a great handle. He's good going to the rim. He's obviously a very good shooter.
Yeah.
I
mean, really, the two guys, like Murray, and then if you can, like, develop Jokic's burgeoning skill set, like, that's, I mean, Marc Gasol, when he's on, he's so good. And I think Jokic, I think Marc Gasol is the Jokic mold.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I think that, like, Moutier could be a slightly slower but slightly stronger John Wall-esque point guard if things break right for him. And I think that, you know, the Bradley Beal, Jamal Murray comp's not a terrible one. And I think
he's built more like James Harden, though.
Moutier?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, bulky. Yeah, he's kind of stronger, but he's like stronger than Wall, but faster than Harden. Shoots worse than probably both of them.
Yeah.
But, like, those three guys, if you figure out a way to maximize their abilities, could be a really, really, really good start to a roster. And
they need to stop dicking around with Fareed.
Yeah, for real. They just seem disinterested in figuring those things out. They just
wave Fareed.
Well, that's a pretty ballsy maneuver. But they do seem disinterested in figuring out, like, the keys to unlock the sort of, like, gearbox that could be, like, a really powerful roster, especially when you think about when you take advantage of that thin, thin Denver air. Like, Moutier can run, Murray can hit threes, Jokic can move.
They need to do the right, like, claps to start the avalanche.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Mountains. Skiing. Denver.
Alright, hey. This is an hour and 5 minutes.
Alright, we've gone pretty long.
Yeah. Good discussion, man.
Good talks. Good chats.
No live reads.
No ads. 105 minutes, or an hour and 5 minutes of pure uncut. Lots of shout outs. NBA
analysis. Go to use promo code online. You get 55%.
All right, bye.
Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.